We are joined now by the general manager of the Nashville Predators, Barry Trotz. First of all, we just listened to your entire press conference, Barry, so it's good to see you. Thanks for stopping by up here. But let me tell you something. I got questions.
Okay.
So I would, if I could, like to start here at the very, very top, which is, what is your number one priority? What is your number one priority when it comes to this? Is your number one priority the 2026 Predators, or is it the 2028 Predators, the 2029 Predators? And I'm saying 26 is like the playoff season. Are you looking at this saying, hey, you know, our top priority is to put a team out there this year to go compete, or is your priority, hey, let's build this thing up in the future?
Well, I can answer that pretty easily. My priority is right now. I want to get us back into a position where we're fighting for a playoff spot. That last year we didn't get in that position. I feel if we get off to a good start, we'll be in that position. If we get to the position where we get in the playoffs, I think we can add some things because we got lots of assets. We got kids coming, and we got draft choices, all that. So I'll continue to do that, but my priorities now, with the eyes to the future, that's not anything I haven't said in the past. But I want to get that winning feeling again back here in this organization. Last year was a tough year, so I want to get that joy back. That's priority number one.
Well, so I'll use an example here between the difference between the priority being right now and the priority being 2028. I saw a report from Greg Wyshynski about your former club, the Islanders, wanting to try to find a way to trade back to take James Hagan so that they can have their cake and eat it too. And I think I saw the report said something like, well, they also have an extra first round pick at like 24th overall. And I'm like, don't think that's going to get you up to number five.
Yeah, no, it won't.
But if they called and they said, hey, we'll give you Matthew Barzal. We're tearing it down. We're going to put Barzal and Noah Dobson out there. Then would you be amenable to trading the fifth pick for a Matthew Barzal who in 2028-2029 will be north of 30, but right now is, if you were looking to contend right now, would be exactly, I think, the kind of player you'd want to add.
Yeah, I think I had Matthew, but I think it's a little bit hypothetical, and I don't like to talk about other teams, but you get a top player at that fifth position, you can turn that player. He can take care of business now, and the fact that you could probably move him to get back in that position would be something like that. But I don't want to talk about any other players. It's a little hypothetical. Plus, it'll get me in a lot of trouble in the league. So, if you get a top player for a top player, then you have to at least think about it.
Let me ask it like this then, without using other players from other teams. If you got offered a guy who is currently a 28, 29-year-old, high-priced, first/second-line center for the fifth overall pick, would you do that? Not McDavid, not a superstar, but a good-ish player.
I would have to consider it. I don't know if I would do it or not, honestly.
Because if the owner, like, for instance, if the owner...
The name does matter, and the fit does matter, so... Put me in hypotheticals, all I can say is I'd have to think about it.
Well, I just look at the situation, and I'm always like, the owner kind of dictates the course that the team goes no matter what. I mean, as if the owner comes to you and says, Barry, I want to make the playoffs this year, you're fired. That, I believe, probably would change your outlook as to what you're going to try to do. And I'm not asking if you've been given that kind of edict or not, but while we're there, maybe we can discuss it. But I just... I guess what I'm trying to get down is, you know, this number five pick, I'm just going to tell you, I think it's going to be Hagans. And I think Hagans is going to go back to BC. And so if you're trying to win now, you don't take Hagans because you're trying to win today. Because if Hagans goes back to BC, then you just made the fifth pick and you don't get to use it because the owner has said, I want to make the playoffs. And so I feel like the last couple of years, outside of when the team totally tore it down at the end of 23, it's kind of been, you know, one foot in now and one foot in the future. And I am wondering if you had to pick a lane between the future of Mullendyke and Wood and this fifth pick and Stegen and Stiga and Surin, if you had to pick your priority being there versus getting this team better so that they can make the playoffs, which one would it be?
Well, I can say I started. This hasn't changed. We talked about a blend, and it has a little bit of both in it. There's no question. There's no and when you say a defined lane, one or the other, it's the blend. And I'm telling you, it's the blend of the young kids, which are going to be the future, and the current players that are here now. And we've got good players. You can't tell me that we got Saros and you got Yossi and all the players that we have that we shouldn't be better than we are. We are. I just know we are. We've got a lot of guys that have a lot of pride, a lot of guys that got a little chip on their shoulder. I feel we're going to be a better hockey team, but they're going to also need the young guys. It's just part of it's reality of this group. As you get closer to the trade deadline, for instance, you know where your team is, and if we have a chance to do something in the playoffs, I'm going to help this hockey team. If we don't, same thing as last year, we're going to get collect assets. We're going to move some people. That's just the reality of the business.
I don't want to live through last year again.
No, I don't either. That's why the priority is now to get that joy back for me, because you know we're used to winning. We're at least being very competitive. And last year I felt we slipped too much. We tried to catch up. It became a hard year. Then we had injuries. And then I traded some people and put us in a position where hopefully we're going to pick third, but we didn't get that through the lottery.
Barry Trotz is with us. Has there been an edict from ownership about wanting to win this upcoming season, about, hey, we want to make the playoffs, hey, we're putting it on you to have us at a certain competitive level for this upcoming season? What are those talks like?
Our talks are you know, the plan for, you know, the next couple of years. You know, what does it look like in the next couple of years? What are we trying to do right now? And I said basically the same type of conversation. The plan hasn't changed. It just hasn't changed. We're being flexible. We're allowing our young guys to grow. We've had a good team in Milwaukee. We've drafted. We've got assets. The cupboards are more full than they've been in a while. This is a destination place, so we're not afraid to spend. But we're going to spend when it's the right free agents and the right time and the right fit. And also looking at, you know, there's no sense at this point. Where we are, we did most of our damage in free agency last year, so we knew that we were not going to do much this year. If it's going to be a trade, it's going to be more of a trade for player or player for prospect plus a draft or something like that. Those type of trades are more interesting to me than anything right now.
Is there any sense that you want the guy you're picking fifth to be on the Nashville Predators next season?
I don't control that, but I would love to have the fifth pick on our team, but I also want to be a realist too. Depending on who we get, they're 18 years old. They're at different stages of their development, physically, mentally, all that. There's a couple of players that if they're available and we take, I would say that they have a good chance to start with us. I don't know if they would finish with us, be quite honest, because it, you know, you start a training camp and it the level just goes up and up. There's a couple players that might be even better players in the future, but they're not physically ready, so you wouldn't have them in that position. So we'll just see who we pick, and that's probably a better question after the draft than before the draft.
So I'm a big believer of what I call the duck theory. If something looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. So when I saw today that Luke Richardson was being hired onto the staff, I went back and I was seeing if he and Andrew Burnett had ever overlapped anywhere, and it doesn't look like they have. It feels to me like you've really stuck your neck out there for Andrew Burnett over the last year. It does feel like every time you came on the show last year, we were talking about whether or not you were going to fire the coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which was not fun, by the way. But
it wasn't fun for me either.
You've again, doubled down, tripled down. Is this Andrew Burnett insurance that, hey, if this team gets off to a rough start like they did last year, Burnett's out, Luke Richardson's in?
No, I wouldn't say that at all. I think I really assessed. I had identified Luke a while ago, quite honestly, as a potential person who I felt that not only has experience but has good eyes, been in the league, been in different teams. But I also felt that if you played against Luke Richardson when he played, he was a hard guy to play against. He's got a great story. He's a wonderful man when you get to meet him. I know you will. And I just felt that just the energy, and after a year like last year, I needed a little change. I needed someone who wasn't fresh work, because Andrew's got a lot on his plate. I put a lot on his plate this summer. And just different things in terms of messaging, everything from projects on how teams are playing. Because to me, the part of being a coach that continues to grow is you see the trends in the league. Sometimes you can't see them because they're happening and you're in the fight. So there's a couple projects I had him do. He's done some projects with his group. But we talked about messaging, what went wrong, what went right, what we changed. We got to fix our 5-on-5 game. Let's call it what it is. I believe in our special teams. But we got a lot of the defense that our 5-on-5 play sort of, I think, lost us last year, let us down. And I think that's where Luke can be another good voice for Andrew. Plus, he wasn't with the group. He didn't live that. So he's going to bring a different energy in there. So that was the whole basis. And I had talked to Chicago a long time ago. Luke was up for a lot of different jobs. And, I wasn't able to talk to him until just a couple of days ago.
So when it comes to the coaching staff, the one thing that I believe in the NHL is you can be a really good coach and you can lose the room. And once you lose the room, you don't get it back. I mean, Paul Maurice retired in Winnipeg because he felt like they weren't listening to him anymore. And Paul Maurice has done a pretty good job in Florida. He's a great coach. With Burnett, when I heard the Marchessault comments, and even these like really thinly veiled Stamkos comments on locker cleanout day, it felt to me like the coach was losing the room. From your standpoint, we know it didn't work last year. For whatever reason, it didn't work. But you sat down with all these guys, and there were no cameras and microphones in there, and so they could be as blunt or honest with you as possible. What reassurances did you have that he didn't lose the room? Because if I know you well enough, I know that even if you like a coach, if he loses the room, he's got to go, right? Like, that's just how hockey is.
I'm a big believer, like, once the players turn on you, they just turn on you, or they don't listen. So everybody that I talk to, and especially your top players, because that moves the needle for you, they said, we like Andrew. We love Andrew, playing for Andrew. We had a rotten year, didn't go our way. And they said, if we just did this or this, I think we could come back and do a real good job. So it wasn't necessarily about the coach. It was about a little bit of themselves, a little bit of, the things that they can do within the, maybe at the system, the little things that they can do in terms of getting off to a better start so we can get and be more productive. And Andrew was the open book. The great thing about Andrew is that he listens. And it's coaches that don't listen, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose the room. But if you listen, I made a lot of mistakes as a coach. But it came from the heart, and players knew that, and they knew that I would listen. And I think that's a quality that Andrew has. And Andrew listened, and he's going to make some tweaks, and he's going to challenge some guys to play a little differently if they have to. But he's going to listen, which is a really good trait as a coach, because if you're stuck in your ways and it doesn't change, then you're gonna lose the room, and I don't believe he did that.
So I do want to hit on some of this draft stuff. Barry Trotz with us here on the program. So it sounds like you don't plan to pick number 5 next year in the draft. That this is kind of a one-year thing, knock on wood. So if that's the case.
Well, I found out this year you don't have to be that as bad to pick one or two or three. So,
but with that being said, the reason I set that up that way was because most people, when they're hired as a general manager, they come to a city that they've never lived in before, an organization they don't really know much about, and they're just kind of a mercenary doing the job. You have lived through the pain of not having the true number one center on the team. And I mean that with all due respect to Mike Fisher and all due respect to whomever. Because of that, do you have to take a center? Given, I know you were asked that, and we were asked about Martone.
My preference would be, I think they're harder to come by. My preference would be, for sure. But at the same time, as I said, you know, a guy like Porter Martone is, like, he's a pretty good player, and you don't want to make the mistake of losing a good player. We're going to spend the next couple of days just deliberating on that. Jeff Kelty and his staff have done a really good job. We've done the combine. We've done the all the meetings, you know, even with the players. I feel that there's not much between, like I said, there's 3 and 8 probably. There's not a whole lot. It could be any mix on depending on what team you're asking. So I prefer that, but it's not a necessary thing.
Did James Hagan's college season turn you off? Apparently the reason he's been falling, Bob McKenzie ranked him before the year as the number one prospect. Now we're seeing some mock drafts. He's at 8, he's at 9, and there's a thought that, and I heard what you said when asked about his size, saying like, hey, you know, there's some really good small players in the NHL.
Absolutely.
But did his college season turn you off? Because apparently that's what has rubbed some teams the wrong way.
Well, I didn't see him. I saw him twice maybe in college this year, maybe once. But I saw him at the World Championships, and he was good. He was really good. He had, I think, one game that I could say that was pretty average for him. But, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, he was playing with two pretty good players. Well, if you're at his age and you're playing with two players like Leonard and Perreault, I mean, you know, they're good players to make you look good, as a lot of people say, but you got to be a good player to play with them. So I'm on the other way with him. So, you know, every year there's a guy that falls. I think last year it was Cole Eiserman, I think. He was a guy that was ranked number one. I think it's a little bit of a curse being ranked number one if maybe you're not a generational talent. And those guys get picked to death. I mean, James Hagans is going to be a good player in this league. He is. And I think those players get the curse of when you're not necessarily a generational player, the scouts pick you apart to the point where you just start to fall a little bit. And I know he's a good player.
Am I wrong for thinking, Barry Trotz is with his Predators general manager, that some combination of that whomever I'm about to mention, one of these guys is going to be on the Predators? James Hagans, Caleb DeNoyer, Brady Martin, Jake O'Brien, Roger McQueen, Porter Martone. One of those guys, assuming that Misa and Schaefer go, one of those guys is going to be a Predator.
I would think so, yeah. I think that's a pretty good list.
So when it comes to deciding between what you really value the most, is it the high-end skill, even if it's in a smaller package? Is it the compete level of a Caleb DeNoyer or a Brady Martin, which is a lot like Sam Bennett? You know, people are comparing him to Sam Bennett. Is it the just raw size and talent, albeit with the medical question marks? Which of those matters the most to you?
Oh, wow. They all bring different packages. What matters most to me? I think the safest thing is always the compete, the drive. That's a really... something that I don't think you find a National Hockey League player, unless they're ultra skilled, are going to make it in the National Hockey League for any length of time. So you're looking for a combination. They all have skill. Some guys have a little bit more. I mean, to me, the wild card in this whole, the two wild cards that you just mentioned, is Roger McQueen. I mean, if you really look at him, he's 6'5.5". Teams are projecting him to be, could be a number one center. There is some question on his back, but I think hopefully that's all been taken care of in terms of all the medical and all that.
Hopefully. Shouldn't you have the answer to that right now?
I do have the answer to that. I know a lot of good things. I mean, he's in track, he's a sprinter. So he's got good genetic genes. If you're that big and you're running sprints, that you're a good athlete.
Have you ever met somebody that had a bad back before?
Yes.
I've never met somebody that's had a bad back. I only know people that have bad backs. I worry about backs.
I do too. And with their studies on body type, different people have more constant back pain with certain body types, all that. So we're looking at all that. But to me, when you throw out all those names, one of them will probably be a Predator next year. And the two wild cards to me is trying to get a gauge where they're going to go is is a guy like Martone and McQueen.
You know, I left out Frondell, so I guess you're not interested in him.
Well, Frondell's a good player.
But I didn't put him on the list.
Well, you just asked me the names. One of those guys will be on there.
I know. It's like, guess who? Right, and Frondell wasn't on the list. Barry Trotz is with us here on the program. I do wonder when it comes to the center position for next season, how likely is it that the guy playing center next to Steven Stamkos will, A, not be Steven Stamkos, and B, will be somebody who is not in the organization as of today?
Well, I'm hoping it's a guy that's in the organization today. My goal is to have Stammer not play center this year. I just think he can play center, and we tried it there. I got to get him back. I feel for the best area for Stammer to be Steven Stamkos, to get him back on the wing. In a perfect world, it would be Stammer playing with a guy like Svetch, or he's got to maybe play with Halla. Right now, based on what we have on our roster, unless we are able to acquire another centerman.
So if it's somebody that's on the roster, does that make you think that it would be Svechkov with Stamkos? That you're ready for Svechkov to be a second-line center in the NHL?
I know it's a stretch. That's why a move like Kala is a light move. He's played with guys like Hughes and Bratt and Mercer. So I know he can do that. But my goal is to get Svechkov to the second position, be it at the start of the year, end of the year, or next year.
Barry Trotz with us here on the program. I was looking on defense, and I know on the left side, again, assuming that Yossi's okay and comes back and returns, Yossi, Shea, Lazan, all on the left side, that seems to make sense. What's going to happen on these right sides right here? And I know you always talk about Willsby and Delgazzo and Blankenberg and the guys that played last year, but there's Molendijk. There's Gibson, who are the high prospects. Are we going to see them up there? And you did a great job in the press conference. The question was asked about, are you going to fix the defense internally or externally? And you did a great job of not answering that
question.
I was very proud of you.
Yeah, well,
but I got to know, like, is it really going to be, you know, Yossi and Justin Barron? Because I think Barron played better last year, but I don't know.
No, I think he will. I got to give the young man a chance. I think getting a getting Lazan and maybe Yossi moving over to the right would be a possibility that we're looking at, and then finding a partner for Shea is sort of the goal. Get another right D. The whole league's looking for a right D. I moved some right D last year, but we also have some internal things that the Willsbys of the world, and you don't want to hear that, but. I think that's if we can just tweak one more right side D, then we'll be in good shape.
So I know I can't mention other players on other teams because they're under contract.
Right.
But there's a guy in Rasmus Andersson, for instance, that is apparently looking for a trade out of Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to that, if you make that trade, it's probably going to cost you a first-round pick, one of the later first-round picks. And then on top of it, you're probably going to have to give him a contract. And I do wonder when it comes to that kind of right shot defenseman who's a solid player, are you willing to make that kind of commitment to get a right shot pair in here with Brady Shea? Or would you rather, sign an older guy at the end of this when it all shakes free? Would you rather try a Justin Barron who's a right shot defenseman out instead of committing to, again, a solid defenseman but who's never going to compete for the Norris Trophy?
Yeah, I think right now, just from the ask that you get from some of these teams regarding some of these players, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us in certain situations. There's certain players that do. Right now, the thing that we're looking at is just finding someone who can be a really stabilizing guy. I like guys that... hopefully have some size to them. I said we've got enough guys that are a little bit smaller. I'd like to add some size on the back end. But we're flexible. We have some cap space. We have some draft choices. Finding out where the term of if you were to make a trade for a player who's a good player who's maybe in his last year from another team, finding out what they are asking for, because that may determine, you know, if you can even do it in the future. You know, that makes sense, because you know, the next couple of years we have some guys that have no move clauses. Doesn't mean they can't be moved, but they do have control of that a little bit. At the same time, you can. I think we're going to fix it internally. You know, Yossi's 25, 30 minutes a night, 25 hopefully. Lazon's a good 20 plus if he has gets back to the sort of where he was 2 years ago. Then that our defense will look a lot different. Just with those two guys in our lineup, they really weren't there last year. So, you know, and then hopefully some improvement with the guys like Barron, Willsby. I'm looking to add something on the right side, to be honest.
Okay, a couple more here. These are probably the more, you know, just the Barry Trotz with us. Yes.
Okay.
When you first got here, you said on this show, you said, hey, fans, be patient with us.
Yeah.
Be, you know, this is going to take some time. There may be some pain involved.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that because I viewed that as being honest with the fans. When it comes to the expectations for this upcoming season, what would you tell the fans the expectations for them should be?
Well, I think two things. A, let's look for Nashville to rebound, to be in that mix again, you know, in that sort of be in that playoff hunt. And you're going to see young players, a lot more young players as call-ups than you did in the past. You know, in the last couple of years, who have been the call-ups? Jankowski, good player, older, but he's not going to move the needle 5 years from now. You're going to see young guys. You're going to see Kemmel, who's still 20 years old, believe it or not, and he seems like he's been around forever. Guys like Schaefer, you saw, you know, Weisblatt, the LaRues that we have in the organization, those type of guys are going to get chances to play. So the combination of solid veteran stars like Stamkos and Marchessault, Yossi coming back and Lazon, and our team play being more consistent to give us a chance. Because our team the year before didn't have near as much talent as we had this year, but played better as a 5-5 team, played better in almost every aspect except the power play and penalty kill. And it just flipped on us last year. So trying to get that balance and get that joy back in Smashville, that become a hard team to play against again.
And then I do wonder, if you are picking five next year in the draft, if this goes off the rails and this, do you expect to still be in this position? Do you feel like you're on the hot seat at all with how last year went, with all the money that was spent and the results that were had?
I'll be honest with you, I never feel like I'm on the hot seat. It's just me.
You didn't feel like you were on the hot seat at the end there in Washington?
A little bit. Obviously, the expectations were we had gone two in a row. Yeah, that was probably the one time that I felt like I was on the hot seat, and we won a cup. So I was off the hot seat. And then, you know, I think I'm at a point where in my career that I'm going to do what's best for the Nashville Predators, what's best for getting this organization in a position where they can continue to build a team that has good young players, a team that has the pipeline, a destination place, having the facilities, we got a great city, we got a great fan base, got great ownership, getting the facilities, you know, up to date, and our, you know, and this arena is going to have an overhaul, as you all know. This is a place where I want it set up for long-term success, and that's my only concern. And what ownership or management does with me, I have no concern. I don't get too wrapped up in that.
And then last one, how do you feel when the criticism got pointed last year in the direction of the coach and also in your direction, given the additions that were made and the money that was spent?
What was my reaction?
Yeah, like how do you feel about people pointing a finger and that finger being pointed at you?
It doesn't bother me. Point it all you want.
Well, I actually haven't pointed it, but I would say there are some things that have been done that I disagree with, and there are things that I agree with. And, you know, if I was the general manager, you wouldn't agree with what I did, but.
No, I don't read a lot of that stuff.
But you listen to this show, right?
I listen to you once in a while, yeah. Oh.
Well, that's good. Barry, good luck.
I'm usually on it, that's why.
That is true. You know what's crazy? You got two other first-round picks. We've talked almost nothing about those two first-round picks. Because
I thought you would be asking me about strategy.
Well, here's the thing. This is the way I feel about it. And by the way, I laughed because when you said, you know, hey, I think there are a lot of teams that are trying to look to get up into the top 15 with extra picks. Like, that, the price is going to be too much. I think you're going to be sticking and picking at 23 and 26. But I do feel like there needs to be some conditioning around here of when a guy is picked. I looked at the Cup final this year. McDavid, 2015. Draisaitl, 2014. Barkov, 2013. Ekblad, 2014. Seth Jones, 2013. I mean, that's 12 years ago. Those guys are in their prime now. But because in football, for instance, a guy gets picked and he plays right away and he's good right away, there's like, hey, you know, we need these guys to be good right now. And I just don't think it works like that in the NHL.
No, it doesn't. You have to be patient. You got to, you know, that's why I want to blend. That's the whole thing, is you can help the development of your top players with a blend. And when they can get to a point where they can be the next level guys, it's like, you know, there's some good players that, you know, you get into that 22, 23, 24, you start to pop. You really do. And if you can help that along with good players, getting them NHL minutes, it really, really helps. And I always laugh, too, when they said, well, you gave up a first-round pick. Well, yeah, sometimes that first-round pick is the 32nd pick, and we're also picking 35. You know, the first-round pick is a good pick to have. You got to pick the right player, and you got to develop the right player, and you got to be patient with that player. And in this league, when you're not patient, you end up replacing a lot of those players with older players. And so you got to leave a little runway, and I've done that with us. Every call-up that we have is a young guy. We've got flexibility with a lot of guys that are in the last year of their contracts, so they're easier to move, if you will. But if they play really well, you can enhance them and put them on another deal. But they give you a lot of assets, so we just got to be really patient, and we've got to protect them as well. You just can't throw them to the wolves.
Barry Trotz, as always, good luck on Friday.
Thank you.
And again, I think it'll end up being James Hagan, so we'll see if that works out. Stillman and Company, we continue. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.